This episode of the Keen on Yoga podcast is sponsored by Moments, the booking system we use and highly recommend. With Moments, you can set up classes, workshops, retreats, appointments, and courses, either online, in person, or hybrid. And you can take payments via Stripe and PayPal. So Moments integrates also with Zoom, so when someone's making a booking, for example, they will automatically receive the link by email. You can also create memberships, subscriptions, on-demand video libraries, and more. It's easy for you and for your customers to use. Moments is a great for solo teachers and right up to studios with multiple sites. Robust reporting and time-saving automations will save you hours on admin, and it even runs a staff payroll. So if you do run a yoga studio, it will manage teacher payments and more. Moments takes care of the whole business side for you. Their excellent team will help you set up, move over from any other automated system, and best of all, Moments offers real-time support via phone, live chat, and email. They are there to help you whenever you need it. Right now, you can get a two-month free trial for Moments. Click the link in the description below or visit www.keenonyoga.com/moments to sign up and give it a go. No obligations. And now, on to the episode. So welcome back, Mark. To Keen on Yoga, and it's lovely to speak to you a second time. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, Adam, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's lovely to speak to you again. Although we've never met, I feel a semblance to Mark, as we've connected so much over this time of the pandemic and subsequently to that. So at some point, you know, we're going to meet and sort of share some ice bath or something together. So we can sit in like tip to toe, you know, like you can be one end, I'll be the other end. Yeah, be very, very snug, very snug together. So to that end, I mean, what we wanted to talk about is lifestyle. Like Mark has got a way of living that's it's not yoga as a lifestyle, because it's not necessarily informed by yoga philosophy or the context of yoga, but yoga fits into that. So he wanted to talk, and I think it's a great idea to talk about the kind of things that surround the yoga practice, complement and support the yoga practice, and also just generally, you know, how to live a more reflective life, I suppose, that is, very much akin to yoga, really, but not, you know, necessarily, you know, kind of living by the Bhagavad Gita, but, you know, just kind of living a natural life that is, alongside yoga. So, you kick off, Mark, and I'll try and add what I can.
Yeah. So, the asana, you know, I get a lot of yoga and asana questions all the time on my social media platforms and all this stuff. And lately I've been trying to share a little bit more of like the other things that I do, like the rest of my life. And a lot of what I do is, you know, based off of what I've learned with yoga philosophy and things. But you know, kind of all my life I have been very, kind of connected with nature. You know, I've always spent a lot of time outside and this kind of stuff. And now I am kind of getting to the point where I'm looking at what I've been doing a little closer. I'm looking at it with more like a microscope lens and seeing like, is there something that I can actually teach or share here with this, you know? And I've kind of boiled it down to like kind of like two basic like kind of principles. And, you know, when I say that, like, I'm very much into moderation. So these aren't like hard, fast rules, but they're ways that I kind of look at and evaluate the things that I do. So all my activities, I try to see if there's maybe a better way to do that thing. And in the lines of connecting and protecting. So with connection, what I mean is like connecting to ourselves. So like yoga, meditation, you know, reading philosophy, these kinds of things, just reading in general, you know. But then like connecting to others, like creating community. So having a shala and making people feel welcome who, you know, might not normally feel welcome in a yoga studio, things like this, like just opening up and being friendly. That's connecting to others, building community. And then lastly, like connecting is like connecting with nature, you know. And I really try to, you know, be outside as much as I can. I really am into like doing as much manual labor as I can before I go to a machinery, something like this, you know, things like that. And then protect, you know, but the other qualifier, is if I can do things where I am avoiding a little bit of the toxins of our modern world, you know, whether it's like screen time like this, you know, or like buying products and putting them in your house that are going to off gas a bunch, and then putting that kind of stuff in your room, or having Wi-Fi in your room, or these types of things. This is how I kind of look at everything. And obviously I could go hardcore with it and like get rid of my cell phone, get rid of my computer, get rid of all social media, you know, but again, I think moderation is very important. So, you know, it's like when I can, when it's possible, look at this certain activity and say, okay, is there a way to connect or protect better than what I'm doing currently?
Right.
Yeah. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. You just came up with those ideas yourself about efficient activity, right? The two connect and really good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, the first thing, I mean, you know, it was a silly question, but the first thing is, well, how if someone's living in the city, do they get to do this stuff? Because obviously you're in a privileged position there, right? Like, you know, you've got, I mean, when you talk about manual labor, I always see you chopping these logs. Now, I'd love to have a go at chopping logs, but unfortunately, I don't live in a place where we need much firewood really currently.
Yeah.
And I don't have an axe on me, you know, for example, right? You know, and I think we could take that and extrapolate that out, you know, with many aspects, right? You know, I mean, how do we share ourselves if we don't have that possibility of doing something like we both have the opportunity to do, you know, create a community. And that's a wonderful privilege that we both share in, you know, how do we take these ideas in a practical level for someone who's a city dweller, you know, living and working, you know, 9-to-5 job, 9-to-6, 9-to-7, whatever it's got these days, you know, family, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. How would you kind of practically translate these to someone else who's coming to you for lifestyle advice, as it were?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a question that I get a lot and that I expect. You know, people are like, well, you live in the woods. Yeah, of course you can cut trees down. Yeah. But if I go to the city park and chop down a tree, I'm going to get arrested. You know, so of course, you know, like if you're living in a city, you know, whether it's a warm climate or not, even if it's a cold climate, you still can't go to the park and cut down a tree, you know. So obviously there's certain things you can't do.
Can you?
No, but there's always – yeah.
You'd have to protect.
But there's always things that we can do. You know, I mean, there's like, you know, like I know a lot of people, you know, that, and this is not a judgment by any means, but you know, a lot of people just like, you know, pay some teenager to mow their lawn for them, you know, when it's like, well, yeah, I mean, if that is necessary because your life is so busy and you don't look at that hour or two you spend mowing as an efficient use of your time, then yeah, hire it out. That makes sense. But like, if you're going to hire it out and then go sit on the couch and watch TV or waste time on Instagram, then that's when I would then consider like, well, could I use my time more efficiently? Could I actually do this, get some exercise doing it, be outside breathing, you know, so is this possible? And I think that we all have the possibility to maybe look and say like, all right, is there too much screen time or indoor time where I could be doing things on my own? You know, or learning to do these things even, you know, a lot of times, you know, like, when we moved here, what is the shala now used to be an apartment. So I had to knock out a wall, pull up some carpet, put some pine flooring down, you know, I could have hired it out, but I thought, this is a good opportunity to learn how to put flooring down, you know? So like when possible, if there's time, you know, I think it's really important to like learn skills. You know, and be a little more self-sufficient. I think it's important, you know, but then of course, you know, if you're busy in the future and you know, you can't do it, then yeah, hire it out, use your time efficiently, you know, but that's kind of the way I like to look at it. You know, obviously not everyone's going to chop their own wood or mow their own lawn or whatever, you know, plant their own trees, but when possible, you know, do so. I think even in cities, you know, something to keep in mind too is like, you know, they make all these indoor vegetable garden, like growing systems that you know, sit by your window or some of them have like a UV light. know, just getting your hands in the dirt and like caring for plants. And then,
so you're growing your own stuff there as well, are you?
Yeah, I have a small vegetable garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grow a lot of tomatoes, make a lot of sauce. but some peppers and some squash and different things as well, you know.
Okay.
But you know, I mean, I could of course have a larger garden if I had the time. And I'm going to expand it every year probably, but yeah, it's just like, I think there is always a way, even in the city, to connect to nature, you know, grow some food of your own, get your hands in the dirt, have lots of house plants in your home. I think that's really great for like capturing all that off-gassing that so much of the products that we buy, anything plastic, you know, is going to have off-gassing, you know? So
how much time do you spend outside in the day, for example?
So
even the winter, well, I mean, knowing that Mark is in a very cold place, I think, or what it looks like.
Yeah, that's why my
it looks pretty cold anyway.
That's why my beard always gets thicker this time of year to try to combat the cold a little bit. Yeah. But I think in the summertime, I probably spend a good six hours, maybe 7 hours a day outside after I teach. In the summertime, there's a lot more work to do. There are, you know, a lot of young trees that I have planted in the last 2 years that are like saplings, you know, that are, you know, less than like 3 feet tall, that still don't have real established roots. So those I'm like watering daily, and I've planted like over 80 trees now in the last 2 years. So that's something else is whenever I cut down a dead tree, you know, I only ever cut down dead ones. I never cut down a live, healthy tree. But when I cut one down, I always try to place it with one other tree, you know, and maybe not in the same spot, but somewhere else, you know, on the property, I try to put another tree. So those young trees need water and they need like fertilizer, things like this. You know, I'm mowing all the time. There's a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of natural area, but there's also a lot of manicured areas. Like there's areas, you know, near the shala that have, you know, mulch and, you know, that the bushes are trimmed and they're weeded.
How much land do you have there?
There's 8.3 acres, which I forget what that is in hectares. I don't remember the conversion.
Oh, okay. That's you know, basically that's got a fair chunk of land you got there. Yeah,
it's pretty big. There's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and there's also there's three dwellings here, so there's three apartments. You know, I live in one, and then I have renters in the other two, and then there's also the shala.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of property upkeep and maintenance.
Right.
You know, to,
and you're doing the maintenance for those ones as well, are you? Or for all the three?
Yeah, for all of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does this dovetail into yoga practice then? I mean, if you could put a percentage, I mean, I suppose the question that comes to mind is what's more important for you? Say like you could do one thing, be in nature or practice your asana practice. I mean, that's a silly kind of polarized idea really, but it seems to me like that's the foundation and then asana is a small part of a much bigger foundation, not the other way around. Because many people do it the other way around, right? Asana is the hub and then off asana is the lifestyle, whatever, you know. And for you, it seems kind of like the other way around, that the hub is nature and then outside of that, asana is a limb of that.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Right.
I mean, I really just view, I mean, asana is, you know, the third limb, you know, and so it's, to me, it's just one piece of the puzzle, you know, and it's not even all my movement either. You know, like if we're talking about like movement, like, you know, movement-based practices.
That's a very small part of your movement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a lot of, additional movement through the day. And it's not my only quiet time either though, you know, like, cause I mean, sure, we're moving in the practice, but we're also quieting our mind to some degree. You know, and with meditation, we should be quieting our mind. But, you know, when I'm outside, I'm also moving. When I'm splitting wood, it's very meditative. You know, it's very like, it's cathartic. It's very repetitive. And I can kind of just get into a rhythm and get my mind focused on one thing. You know, so I feel that you know,
so the two things kind of complement each other in a way, right?
They do. They do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that's the case. Yeah. And I don't feel conflicted with the two. I don't feel like I'm making a choice.
No,
you know, there's always my time for my asana in the morning.
I'm not asking you to choose. Yeah. 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 Not at this point anyway. Yeah. but what about, how does the nature or how does the lifestyle kind of relate to, how does it affect and relate to what you do in the asana practice? Does it have any relation? Like, does it influence, you know, would you say that your view of nature and life influences the way that you move in and relate to your asana?
I mean, maybe not the way that I move per se. But I mean, I do, you know, and I realize that not everyone can be in nature. And there has to be shalas in cities and things. But like going to Mysore, for instance, you know, like I love going to Mysore, but you know, the air quality there, you've been there. It's not great, you know? And I think about like, man, we're doing all this, like, you know, Ashtanga is a breathing practice at its base. And then we're doing these hard asanas on top of that, you know? And it's like, we're doing this breathing practice in a place where the air quality sucks, you know? So, I mean, with the nature for me, it's like, I really wanted to have a shala in the woods because I live in the woods, and I thought, you know, like people should be able to come here and have that same benefit. They should have the quiet of the woods. They should be able to see the sunrise through the trees in the morning and watch deer come out of the forest and nibble my garden. That's always something to watch. You know, and
you're running out.
So yeah, get away.
Yeah.
You know, and then have all that clean air around, you know. I think that's just really important. Like if we're going to be doing this deep breathing, you know, there's, you know, I don't know how many thousands of trees on the property. I can't begin to guess.
Oh, really?
But I mean, you
that
know,
much, that
thousands
many trees.
And thousands of trees. Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, it's, right. You know, so it's, yeah, I just figure like, man, like this is like a great place to get that super dose of like clean oxygen, you know, and, you know, I think, why would you want to practice in a city if you could practice, you know, in nature?
But that's why they said, I mean, the one reason why it's said to practice early in the morning in India, you know, obviously there's this idea about Brahmamurti and auspicious hours, but also just use the air quality, I think, being better.
Yeah.
A kind of pragmatic or skeptic's take on it.
Totally.
Well, maybe we'll get you on again doing a listing the names of your trees, all the different species, not the name, but the species of the trees. That'll be a riveting podcast for some people anyway. Right. Well, what about how does food and diet fit into this? The kind of contentious aspects. I mean, you mentioned growing your own food a little bit. Do you have any principles or rules around food, the way you eat? Because obviously this is a huge topic for people, and you know, what you put into your body is kind of the fundamental basis of how you exist, really, I suppose.
Yeah. So I know food is a very like, you know, it can be a touchy topic for a lot of people. And, you know, people are very, I mean, some people treat their diet more intensely than people treat like a religion. They get very argumentative sometimes about food. I'm not very dogmatic when it comes to like what diet you choose. You know, if someone is vegan, hey, that's great if it works for you. If someone's vegetarian, that's awesome. If someone is, you know, a carnivore, you know, whatever. But what I usually notice with people is that if you're choosing a specific diet, like say you're going to do keto and you're going to eat a lot of like animal proteins, or you're going to do like a vegan diet or whatever, people are doing these diets because they are interested, because they think it's the right thing and they think it's good for their body and they feel good. But because that they care about how they feel and they're taking the effort to do this, what they're also doing is usually they're being a little bit more selective with ingredients. You know, so like, I don't think it's necessarily you have to do this diet, you have to do that diet. I think we need to be more aware of like what we're actually putting into our bodies. And what I think is important is we put food into our bodies, not these like chemicals. You know, that I think is one of the worst things. So I think eating a whole foods diet is very important. And you kind of see that with no matter what diet someone chooses, as they start cleaning up their food. You know, if they're eating meat, then they're probably buying more organic meat and grass-fed things. And, you know, they're being a little more particular about that. It's people that just basically eat whatever and don't care about diet that are then literally just eating whatever. And we get a lot of food colorings. We get a lot of preservatives. We get a lot of, you know, like high fructose corn syrup, a lot of maybe seed oils, you know, like canola oil or like Crisco, things like this. When we're not paying attention,
I mean, it's crazy to have to point out that a processed diet, you know, is not food, but because they've just become the mainstream. If you just go around a supermarket and lay your hands on things, you know, like, you know, without thinking, your 90% of what you pick up is going to be not really food.
Not real food.
I mean, crazy to point out.
It's insane to think about.
But, you know, unless you actually, you know, like once upon a time, you know, even 40, 50 years ago, obviously, you know, you wouldn't really have had much choice but to eat real food. But now, you know, you have to really make a conscious effort to eat real food. And you see this in, you know, in countries, I'm in Asia right now, and, you know, and they've still, I mean, you know, obviously we can draw a romantic picture around it, but nevertheless, I mean, you know, there's still a lot more real food available on the streets. You know, there's a lot of street food, there's a lot, you know, and you see it in the practitioners, you really see it in the daily people, you know, that the diet, what is easeful and comes easily to hand, they're eating, right? You know, and now, you know, I mean, I think, you know, particularly for people in the West, and again, it's like people are going to say here, well, it's a privileged thing to be able to go and get real food and cook real food, you know, and it's not easy, right? Like, you know, like, and I haven't got the time, you know, like, I mean, what do you say to that kind of thing? I haven't got the time, you know, because this will be the argument. Right? I haven't got the time nor the money to go and get whole foods and cook whole foods, you know, that doesn't fit into my day.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas, no, again, it's just to finish in the East, is like, I was walking in Bangkok today and there's food stores and they're little lunch boxes. You've got the rice, you've got meat, you've got a little vegetable there, but you've got real food and you can pick one of those up for nothing, you know, and that's your lunch, you know, real food, right? And that opportunity isn't there so much in the modern West, at least, right?
Yeah, it is hard for sure to get, you know, real food, especially if you are very busy, you know, for maybe people that are working like two jobs, maybe like single moms or even single dads, you know, a single parent who has like several kids to take care of and is working more than one job. Like, yeah, it's super hard. But I do think there are creative ways to do this, you know, whether it's maybe you have a little small garden in your yard or in your apartment. And maybe you assign one of your children to like, okay, like your job is to, you know, like, care for the tomatoes and your job is to care for the peppers, you know? And then they're also learning at the same time, you know, but I mean, I feel like there's always ways to get, we don't have to eat a diet 100% food based because that is really, really hard to do. But as many decisions as you can make, like, oh, this is food and that's, you know, has more preservatives in it or whatever. Try to go with those. So even if you have a small garden and you're, you know, every day in your salad, you're putting your tomatoes on it instead of, you know, ones that were maybe GMO that you bought at the grocery store or something, you know, or no tomato at all, you know, that kind of thing. That's still going to be better, you know, so I think little changes lead to bigger changes, but it's sometimes hard to, you know, it's hard to like transform our diet overnight. So if you make a small change and then you get used to that routine of like, okay, like I can water these tomatoes every day. I can, you know, do this, do that. You get used to that, becomes part of your lifestyle, you know, and you feel good from it. And then before you know it, you're making another small change. You're adding something else. Mm. And, you know, like usually we have time for things if they're priority. We don't have time for things if they're not priority. You know, that's really what I think it comes down to.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it is true. I mean, you know, people always say, well, I don't have time to, you know, to cook for myself. I don't have time for yoga. And it's like, well, you know, yes, people live very busy lives, but there are means and ways to do something with a certain amount of time, which will be effective, whether it's asana practice or, you know, or cooking. I mean, to that end, how much time do you spend in the kitchen actually cooking food, or do you batch cook, or have you got any kind of tips around making things, you know, speedy or you know, slimming down the time it takes to make meals?
Yeah. You know, I do a little bit of like batch cooking, but not that much. I like to try to eat, you know, fresh stuff daily for the most part. You know, I've spent so much time in the outdoors camping as a kid and even as a young adult, you know, like in the mountains and doing things and cooking on a single burner, you know, a little camp stove, that I figured out ways of cooking with like very little ingredients. And maybe it's not going to like be an award-winning restaurant, you know, but I like it. And, you know, and that's all that really matters, you know, but yeah, I cook just like, you know, I try to do like one pot meals, you know, or one pan meals, you know, simple ingredients, you know,
So are you cooking, or I know you have a partner or wife, right? I mean, is it you that does the cooking, or does she? We share it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think she heads up a little more of the cooking in the summertime when she's not teaching. She's a school teacher. But in the fall, winter, and spring, I try to pick up more of the slack. I try to take care of that so that at least food is all prepped and cut or ready, to go. For when she's like coming in the door.
Why am I just eating one pot meal again, Mark? Yeah. I would like two dishes at least. But is this always the way it was with you? Because a lot of people will got a plague devil's advocate here, short circuiting our comments, that we'll get. And, I kind of see people think, this seems to come very easily for you, and you grew up in the nature, and you're a certain kind of guy, and very outdoorsy, and and you're not making those little steps. Or was there changes that you had to make as well? Because, for example, getting used to simple flavors, right? If you're used to a high processed diet and many flavors and many different things, that's really hard. And it was hard for me, for example, who did grow up on processed. Yeah. Diets, to get used to different flavors, right, and make those small steps. And it took me a while to make them. It didn't happen overnight. I used to feel like a happy meal was a good meal. You had your fry, you had your potato, you had your meat, felt that. You had your tomato in the bun, right? Like, that to me made sense. So it took me a long time to change mentalities, and then to change tastes, even to change what I craved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree completely with what you're saying. I think all my life I have tried to eat healthy for the most part. I mean, I do have a sweet tooth, I'm not going to lie there. I do love sweets. It's my vice, but I've always tried to eat healthy.
What kind of sweets?
Ice cream is probably like my all time go-to,
I've seen you posting ice cream pictures. Yeah.
But really anything chocolate.
Stay away from Italy then. Yeah. You don't want to teach too much in Italy. You'll be trashed, Yeah.
Totally. I had to limit my time there. So I've always tried to eat healthy, but my idea of what healthy was has definitely evolved and changed over the years. When I was in high school, I was a wrestler, and I was rock climbing, and I was really into studying nutrition. I was buying different bodybuilding nutrition books and things like that, so I was all about you look at how much protein, how many carbs, and how many fats I'm getting, and balance those out and get as many calories as I can, because I had a very high metabolism. I was trying to put on muscle, that was my idea of nutrition then. It was very basic, carbs, fat, proteins, amino acids. I knew some of that stuff, some of the minerals and vitamins and stuff. But I wasn't looking at is this hamburger that I'm about to eat grass-fed, or is it this, or is it that, or, is it locally sourced, or did it fly here from, across the world, or things of this nature, or the vegetables, that kind of stuff. So my idea of health was definitely more limited. So I've had to evolve and change of what I think healthy is. But I think something that's very important is that if you think you're eating healthy, if you're trying to eat healthy, I think that mindset actually has a lot to do with your health, So even if you don't have all the knowledge in the world of what's healthy and what isn't, if you're eating with good conscience, because you are this is good, I'm doing good for my body, I'm fueling it, I'm doing that, I think that makes a huge difference. If you eat with guilt or with sorrow or this or that, I think that really affects the way we digest and process things.
I think the one link I don't necessarily agree with that you mentioned before is that the idea that the conscious diet will then breed an ethical conscience. Because you were mentioning also with your wrestling, and I see this with a lot of guys, they got to get the protein in, they got to balance the calories in the way that you were mentioning, and it doesn't necessarily relate at all to how the animal has been raised or blah, 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 in terms of the social. So I can understand and follow you down the path to a certain way, but how did it change for you? Do you think the yoga practice made you more reflective on, in terms of not only what's good for your body, what's good for kind of everyone, right? Like not just you.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Initially, I was looking at what was good for me. And then I think it was the yoga practice that made me think, hey, well, what's good for animals? What's good for the environment? And what's good for me? So now I'm balancing out three, it's like you're fighting three battles at the same time. You know, like I want to be healthy, but I also don't want to, you know, harm too many living things. And I also don't want to, you know, harm the environment. So yeah, that gets very tricky indeed, for sure. But again, I think we just do our best. You know, we do what we think.
Obviously, people are going to be wondering here, like, you know, what is the status of your diet? Are you vegetarian or vegan? Or, you know, I mean, do you live or are you more flexible with it? You know,
how, yeah.
You said you were eating meat. Have you evolved to stop eating meat, or do you eat a little bit?
So, yeah, I grew up eating meat for sure, you know, at home and stuff. And through my early 20s, like my time in the military, I was still eating meat. And I think around age like 23, 24, somewhere in there, I was doing a lot of climbing. I was, you know, getting even more focused on nutrition and trying to learn more. And that's when I started limiting meat a lot, to the point where I would have meat maybe like once or twice a month. And if I did, like if I was going to have it, if I was going to spend the money on it, it was going to be like organic, grass fed, you know, that kind of stuff. It was going to be like quality sourced and local, you know? So I wasn't just like going to like, you know, the random bar down the road and grabbing a burger or whatever, or McDonald's, you know?
Yeah.
I was trying to be ethical about it. And then that just kind of like slowly weaned away to being vegetarian. Now I'm kind of starting to move back the other direction. I'm becoming more flexible with my diet again. I'm 42 right now, and I'm finding myself feeling tired and weak a lot. I have recently, this is crazy, and I think I'm going to make a lot of people mad here, but whatever. But I have recently started adding beef liver into my diet. Which I do not like at all.
No, I don't imagine you would. No. It sounds horrible.
It's horrible. But it's one of the most nutrient dense foods on the planet.
We talk about enjoyment. Why don't you just get a burger or something? I mean, you know, you're gonna enjoy your food, right? To your point, you know.
Well, actually, that's a separate topic that we can talk about in a minute. But I don't think we need to do everything for pleasure or enjoyment. You know, like our asana practice is hard sometimes. We still do it because we know it's good for us. And I think food can be similar, you know. So I have added this into my diet recently. And now I'm doing it like once a month. I'm feeling, believe it or not, I'm feeling stronger. I'm feeling good. I think really? It's just enough.
I was going to say, like, how, yeah.
Enough yeah. B just, vitamins. Just
that,
yeah.
That's all you have. That just that meat once a month, and that's enough for you, is it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. And, it's like something, you know, kind of like a little tiny micronutrient that's missing or something. It's just kind of enough to kind of trigger something, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, over the years, when I was even, you know, stricter on my, you know, fully plant-based diet, I would still be flexible when I would travel or like go to someone's home. If someone cooked for me and they made something that had like meat in it, you know, I'm not going to like overindulge, but if someone makes like pasta sauce and there's meat in it, I'm going to eat it. I'm going to be gracious, you know, grateful for it, whatever. So I've always been flexible with it. I've never been super, like strict on that.
Hardcore. Yeah. But you're not out there shooting deer on your property either, you know? Can you do that? Is it legal? No. If a deer comes on your property, can you bag it?
Yeah. I mean, it is legal. Yeah. I have not done it. Well, I mean, you have to have a hunting license. And with that, they give you, I think, two or three. I'm not a hunter. I don't know. But I think you get like two or three tags, they call them, a year.
Right.
And then like when you shoot it, you have to like tag it and then take it to a processing place. And if you don't have a tag, they won't process it. So it's like an illegal, you know. So you have to have a license.
You have to
and
do
tag.
It yourself as well. That would be another job for you.
Yeah.
Shoot and gut your own meat.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Take a few more hours in the day. But later on down the line. You know, but a lot of people, I was going to say, you know, how are you feeling with this? How are you feeling with the vegetarian diet? You're not the only one. Obviously, many people have said that they have, as they've gotten older, started. I mean, we had a big conversation on this platform with Laruga, which frustrated a lot of people. And she was saying that she came from a vegan diet and was now eating quite a lot of, I think, a lot of meat, really, but are feeling great about it, you know? I think it is more of a conversation to be had with yoga practitioners as well. Obviously, the diet has traditionally been pure veg, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, there is leeway for a lot of other opinions around this. You know, if you're not feeling healthy either, then there's questions to be asked there as well, which I think a lot of people are arriving at. You know, I mean, as much as one has to have a social conscience, you know, do you want to sacrifice yourself along the way? You know, yeah. for an ideal, as you say. If you're not consuming every day, then it maybe isn't exactly the same thing either. But yeah, it's a topic which has got a lot of scope with it, and probably will, you know, we'll leave it there. But thanks for being honest with that.
Yeah, and, of course. But you know what I was saying about, like, you know, back to, like, circling back a little bit. I don't think everything we need to do necessarily needs to be pleasurable, and I think there's a lot of growth we can find there, like emotionally and mentally, by doing things that aren't always comfortable, you know. And that's kind of one of my, like, you know, one of the things I like to look at is, like, how can I find a little bit of discomfort in my day? Because I don't think I think we get too comfortable, we get lazy, you know. You know, when we were kids, I remember, like, my mom would put down this, like, giant plate of broccoli on the table that was doused in vinegar. And it was like, oh my God, like, I don't like broccoli anyway. And then you put vinegar on it, you're killing me here. You know, it was like really hard to eat, but it was just like, I don't care if you like it, they're good for you, so you're going to eat them, you know? And we do that as children. We do things that our parents say are good for us that we don't necessarily like, but we do it. But then as we become adults, we get very spoiled and kind of, just spoiled. You know, we think, like, well, I'm only eating what I want to eat because I'm an adult now and no one has to tell me what to eat anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when would you go to a restaurant and order something that you don't like? You know, we wouldn't. It's silly. It sounds ridiculous. But I think there's a little bit of benefit. You know, like, when I'm eating, so I should have said this before, like, when I eat this beef liver once a month, I'm not eating a giant piece. I'm eating like 3 or 4 ounces. You know, I'm doing it like a vitamin. Like, I take a few bites and it's like, okay. Right. You know, so it's like, not everything we eat, I think, has to be pleasurable if there's, you know, if there's some benefit in it. I don't know. So, but yeah, I try to find discomfort. I try to find things that aren't always good. You know, I like to work when it's like freezing cold outside or when it's like blazing hot outside. You know, I like the extreme temperatures. That's also why I like doing my cold baths and why I like doing the sauna also. I think those extreme ranges. Yeah. There's an infrared sauna in Mashallah that a lot of the students utilize before or after practice.
Wow. Yeah. It's like a little spa you've got set up there. I was going to ask you about the – I'm coming there. Do you kind of manicures and pedicures as well?
No, not yet. I have to learn.
No, later. Down the line. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the cold baths. Yeah, I've seen you doing this a lot recently. Do you have any advice for people wanting to start that? I know you do. You've put out some good ideas recently. If people, you know, because many people are not going to have access to, unless they live in a very cold place with a bathtub outside, which many people also do. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you start it? You know, you were mentioning that you only need a minute or two under a cold shower that has adequate benefit. And what are the benefits in the first place? It's become so trendy, these cold baths. Even I've gotten into it.
I mean, speak a little bit, man, about the benefits, there's so many. But the main reasons I do it are for recovery with my asana practice and also all the, you know, labor I do around here. I feel my knees and my back just like I feel like my knees are singing praises to me for doing it. You know, my knees are so happy when I get out. So for the recovery aspect, I think it's huge, but also it's a really big immune booster. It really boosts our immune system a lot. And I mean, shoot, with everything going on in the world today, everything you do for your immune system, the better, you know? Those are the main reasons why I do it.
Why are people say it boosts the immune system, but why is that?
You know, I think because
it seems like it would do the opposite, like, because it's hard, like, it would kind of like challenge your immune system and you kind of go down in a cold or something after sitting in the ice for a period of time.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's you know, it's kind of like anything that's challenging. You start to adapt to those things, you know? So I think, we build a little more resilience, by doing this, you know, and
oh,
lost my train of thought. What I was going to say. Maybe we can edit that out.
Yeah, sure, we can. No, it's a challenge. You know, like why should boost the immune system through the challenge of the ice bath? And I know the idea that, you know, your immune system is challenged and therefore we get stronger through that challenge. And I guess it's what you're saying is that, you know, through that kind of disciplining yourself, you actually build fortitude, you know, like by not making things or allowing life to be too kind of comfortable, you know, you actually do build more strength rather than kind of deplete your strength. Because I think a lot of people think, well, you know, if it's hard, I haven't got the energy and I'll go down. You know, they kind of think the opposite way around, right? Like, you know, I can't do that because I'll be too tired, or, you know, that is too cold and I'll go down with a cold or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, quite often it's the opposite. You know, like by challenging, you get more energy, you know, not less and not weaker.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And of course, you can also, I mean, you can deplete your immune system too doing it. Of course. Mm. I mean, if you spend like 25 minutes in there and are getting the chills, I mean,
oh, you go down with hypothermia.
Yeah, exactly. I've been hypothermic before when I was younger.
Have you?
Yeah. Spent a little time in Alaska doing some mountain training. You know, I was in the Marines, and you know, 30 days in Alaska in December, sleeping in a tent every day, not having any heat source really other than body heat and, you know, your clothes. Yeah, it just got a little too much for me. I think it was around day 20 or something. Just got a little too much for my immune system, for my body. And, you know, I got really hypothermic. So yeah, not a fun thing, at all, but yeah, no. I mean, you can definitely stay in the cold baths. So, you know, the first thing that happened is, I guess I don't remember the name of it, but there's a vein that runs in our forehead, that when it gets too cold, like if you don't have your hat pulled down to like your eyebrows, you know, if it gets too cold, that starts to create a feeling of nausea. Okay. And if you're in the cold and now you're nauseous, so you're like, you know, you're losing your calories, your food and your hydration, that makes the hypothermia come even faster. You know, because obviously our immune system needs, you know, food and water to fight things off, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I remember feeling kind of like drunk, like my speech was slurred. I was super, super nauseated. I couldn't keep anything down. Even when I tried to drink water, it'd make me throw up again. You know, you have to like slowly warm the body back up. But also you have to get liquids in. It's so important, because the dehydration makes it worse. And I couldn't keep any liquids down. Like, I just kept throwing them up. So eventually, I had to get like IVs, you know, pumped into my arm. And that was like a huge, quick turnaround. It was pretty amazing. Yeah.
Oh, but it could have killed you, I suppose. I mean, I wonder how long it would take to.
Yeah. I mean, it can, you know, I was with my, you know, my Marine Corps, mountain warfare training group. So we had, you know, like Navy doctors, medics and stuff, you know, present all the time when we train. So I wasn't really worried about that. I mean, I just felt like shit, but I was really just like, okay, they're going to take care of me. Like I'm going to be okay. but it definitely can kill you.
Get some time off, you know, get a stay in the night, like a warm tent, maybe just with an IV on, lie down.
Yeah. I was totally faking. Finally. Actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Just to get warm. Plenty of mountaineers like die of hypothermia all the time.
Yeah, you know? It is extremely hypothermia. And if someone was doing an ice bath, I saw recently, they stayed in for like over 20 minutes or something, and then they got hypothermia. You know, I mean, you have to be careful with these things, obviously, and the ice bath the same, you know. Mm-hmm. I do it for like about 5 or 6 minutes, and that's, you know, it's more than adequate, you know.
Yeah. I usually try to shoot for like 3 to 5. That's like a nice goal.
Right.
I feel pretty good there. But you were asking like how to start, you know, and I think – you know, if you don't have a fancy setup, you know, if you don't do it outside, whatever, if you don't have a bathtub in your home, you know, most people have a shower. And really, like, you know, one of the things I read recently, and it was actually written by this like Ayurvedic doctor. I should find the article and send it to you. It was kind of interesting. But they were saying that just getting your feet under cold water every day does the same exact effects. And I was like, well, shoot. That's pretty cool, you know.
It's an easier way around.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, you put your feet in the cold water, and hang out there for a few minutes, and you begin to acclimate and get used to it. You know, before you know it, you're doing like the knees down, you know, in the shower, and then like the waist down and so on, you know. But I don't think we need to be super hardcore and like, you know, get the cold water on our head running down our whole body and stay there for five minutes. That's kind of miserable, actually, you know.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. A lot of it is, you know, kind of a moderate, you know, way around things, right? Right. You know, it's kind of like not one or the other thing necessarily, right?
Yeah.
Although when I've seen you in the ice bath, I keep thinking, get those knees down, get further down. Get your head down.
Yeah. I mean, I do usually whenever I, you know, stay in there for a minute, I get nice and low in there. Another tip I think for people starting out is, even though the shower, you can start with your feet only and work your way up, so that makes it kind of approachable. Just for my own opinion, like actually getting a cold shower where that cold water is, it's always constantly new cold water hitting you and running down you. So it's like every second is kind of shocking. Like it's harder to adjust.
Mm.
But when I jump in the tub, that first second is a little bit shocking. But then if you get really still and you don't move, if you don't move at all, like a layer of water around your skin almost starts to like warm up a bit. And you feel like comfortable pretty quick. Now, if you move around, you jostle all the water, you feel like a little shock of cold again. You know,
yeah, sometimes do that.
Yeah. So I find like get in there, get still. And then like I try to get like in a meditative state. I try to just really calm my breathing and not move my body.
It does get you in the moment. Yeah.
And I think it's actually very relaxing. Like I really enjoy that, you know.
I wouldn't say I'm at the point of enjoyment, but I do think it's actually, you know, people think, oh God, a cold shower is hard enough. I want to just say that I think the cold shower is actually harder than the ice bath. Because as you say, that cold shower, the water is kind of constantly coming on you, and that's tough. Whereas the ice bath somewhat, because you're in it and you, at a certain point, you don't actually feel cold anymore after the initial shock. As you say, you just feel there's an intensity in the skin. It's you know, for anyone that wants to try it and get a little tin bath outside in your house in the winter if you're in a cold place, give it a go. It's not that hard, and it, you know, and I've definitely benefited hugely from it. As you say, joints, knees, wherever hurt. In fact, the water seems to go to the place it's hurting, and you can feel the ache. If there's something that's particularly not good with your body, like a knee or a back, you feel that place. You know, like even if you didn't necessarily feel it before, it's like okay, you can feel the water going there. I wanted to kind of backtrack, you know, covering a number of different things. You mentioned before about, you know, obviously the power of being outside, the stillness of the outside. What about practice outside? What do you think about that?
You know, I,
you know, traditional Mysore, don't practice outside. You know, you've got to practice in your shala. Windows closed, right? No.
I don't think I'm doing it for those reasons. I wouldn't say like, oh no, it's against, you know, tradition, so I'm not going to practice outside. But I don't like practicing outside. I mean, maybe if you had a deck with a very stable surface, you know, but like putting your mat on like on the beach, you know, I think beach yoga is like overly popularized. But really, like if you've ever done it, it's like it's a shit practice.
I can imagine. Yeah, I know. I've never tried it, but yeah.
It's not stable. It's bad, you get sand everywhere, you know. Yeah. You know, and even practicing on grass, like on the lawn, it's just like it's too soft and there's too much motion in the ground. I really just prefer being in my shala on a hardwood floor. I think that is really just kind of the way to go. And, you know, maybe if I didn't spend the rest of my day outside, I would maybe consider practicing outside more to get outside time. But for me, it's like I'm going to be outside so much anyway that, you know, my practice is done indoors where I can build a lot of heat for my body.
Right.
And you know, I practice so
like
early.
Practicing outdoors. Yeah. Or maybe you'd be kind of like attacked by raccoons or something.
Raccoons, like mosquitoes, coyotes.
Coyotes. You have coyotes there.
God. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So yeah, maybe inside is the way to go. But I mean, for people that like practicing outside, is that, you know, what would you say? Is that a right? Or, you know, I mean, I always felt, to be honest, what I say to people is that there's a breeze that comes on the skin, and I don't generally like the air that rushes on the skin, you know? So I've always said, I, you know, as much as it's nice practicing outside, that I don't think it's ultimately what I choose to do. Yeah. For that reason. Yeah.
I agree 100%. Yeah. Even if it's hot outside and sunny, there's still that breeze, that moving air, and it's just something about it. I don't seem to have the same quality of practice. But,
well, I think you've got the vayus, like you've got the vayus in the body, and then if there's an external kind of wind on the outside, I think it kind of unsettles things, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's cool. But I mean, ultimately, if someone loves doing it, I'm not going to tell them not to.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, absolutely. I think that's the bottom line. It's if it's your passion, if something's your passion, you know, then you know, go with it, you know,
yeah,
because there's something good in that. There's something, there's always something good in that inspiration if you're inspired to do something, you know.
Totally.
What, you know, going back to lifestyle choices, what about the screen time you mentioned? Do you have any tips for how long you spend on the screen? People will be wondering how long is too long. And the other thing is sleep time. How long do you sleep? You mentioned to me in a private conversation, well, private conversation, but a conversation we had previously, that you sleep on a hard wood. Do you think it's all getting a bit stoical here? You're kind of Marcus Aurelius reinvented in the woods up there.
So, you know, sleep, I think, is something that is like so misunderstood a lot of times by like just general. I mean, yeah, obviously there's doctors who study sleep, you know, I think there's good science with understanding sleep, but I think just the general population, they're like, oh, how many hours of sleep do you get? You know, oh, you're not getting 8 hours. Mm. Oh, that's really unhealthy. Yeah. You're probably ill. Yeah. You're probably your immune system's low or whatever. And people worry about me because I get up at 2 a.m. You know, they're like, oh, that can't be healthy. And it's like, wait a minute. I told you one thing about my sleep and immediately you think I'm not healthy, but you didn't hear all the other things that I do with my sleep that you're probably not doing, you know? So I don't think it's about quantity as much as quality.
What time do you go to bed? You
get up at 8 p.m. 8 to 2 is 6 hours.
That's so not much.
No, but what it is though is the average person, their sleep cycle is around 90 minutes, an hour and a half. So if you sleep in increments of that, you know, so like 4.5 hours or 6 hours or 7.5, actually 8 is off cycle a little bit. So I feel like a lot of people who sleep for 8, you're getting a lot of sleep, but you're waking up in the middle of a sleep cycle. And then that's why we feel groggy sometimes when we wake up, because we're in the middle of a heavy sleep. I find 6 hours to really work well for me. About once a week, I'll go for 7.5, like on my like rest day, I'll go for 7.5 and feel like awesome. Feel totally recharged, you know?
And so no naps in the day, no extra little.
No, I don't nap during the day. You know, I've tried it like a handful of times in my life. I get really bad headaches if I nap during the day. It's like I wake up feeling like, come on again. Whoa, what day is it? It doesn't work for me.
You come back, it's horrible. I can't get into it. A lot of the yoga teachers do it though, because you know, following this lifestyle where they get up very early and then, you know, have a sleep in the day, and it seems to work for them. Never has for me. Why would you wake up so early? I mean, does it not have a detrimental effect on? I mean, obviously, in the vein of what we're talking about, I mean, what about social life? What about life with your partner, your wife? You know, how do these play into a kind of balanced lifestyle? Because it seems quite extreme. A lot of people are going, this is so extreme. And you're sleeping you're not sleeping in a bed, right? You're sleeping on a hard wood surface or something?
Well, yeah, kind of.
A log?
Yeah,
a log. Outside, or some kind of sleeping bag and a log?
So the hard surface is something I just recently started doing. I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 months ago. That's not something I've been doing for a long time. So a lot of these things that I do, I've been doing for a long time. And some of them are things I'm just, you know, kind of incorporating, you know.
It's making
trying to get closer to nature. Yeah. But I always find when I'm outside camping, sleeping on the ground with my thin little Therm-a-Rest mat, that I wake up feeling amazing and my back never hurts and you know, things like that. So I was like, man, I need a harder surface, you know. So I built a wooden frame that I then have it's a 2-inch thick. So there is a mattress, but it's thin. It's 2 inches thick. And it's made of wool. There's no plastics or anything in it at all. It's a wool exterior stuffed with wool. I sleep on that, you know, and there's a sheet over that, of course, to protect it, you know, the sheet over that. That's what I sleep on. And I don't know. I think there's something to sleeping on a harder surface. It actually supports the bone structure maybe a little more than if you're like sinking into a soft, you know, like waterbed or overly squishy bed. It really supports the bone structure. And I think it allows the muscles then to relax more because the bones are supported. You know, it just lets me like totally like soften.
Interesting. And what about pillow? Use a pillow?
Yes.
Many people are against using pillows because the neck's propped up in a weird way. So, you know.
Yeah, but I use one of those like curved pillows that like dips down behind my head and then curves up behind my neck. So it keeps my cervical spine in a nice shape. I sleep on my back and then sleep on one of those.
Yeah. Did you ever think, though, that it's easy to get into a kind of masochistic loop where you kind of make things harder and harder for yourself, you know? You know, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, that's hard. Let's make it a bit hard. I mean, because I get this, like, you know, I'm not, like, you know, I'm not pointing the finger at you. As you know,
yeah.
Oh, let's do, you know, like, it's hard, you know, that ice bath is hard at 5 minutes. Let's take it up to six, you know, like, you know, because you kind of feel like, well, if it's hard, it must be good. Do you know what I mean? That there's a kind of equation and a kind of Protestant, you know, kind of like, that kind of old-fashioned kind of, you know, suffering is good kind of ethic, and it's going to be better in the future if I do it hard, you know, if it's hard now, mm-hmm. you know, and then it all gets a bit miserable, right?
Yeah.
So how do you give yourself pleasure? How do you allow, or can you allow yourself also to enjoy and to have comfort and to pleasure, or, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I always kind of jokingly say, but half serious, I guess, that I'm a lazy person. But I really enjoy
likely. Yeah.
I really enjoy just like sitting down at the end of the day and like, you know, like reading or, you know, putting on Netflix or something. And
so you do watch a little bit of stuff.
And, yeah, you know, I do.
Like
I do.
A big big tub of ice cream on your lap, Netflix.
On Friday night. Yeah. Friday night, you know,
right.
Ice cream.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're able to modify it, to moderate a little
to
bit.
Moderate, you know? Yeah, I think moderation's good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I have an addiction to discomfort, but of course, you know, an addict never knows they're an addict until a friend points it out to them. So maybe you're telling me something.
Well, you know, I can get addicted to anything. So, you know, I kind of noticed that I can, you know, easily kind of get into a kind of, you know, whereas I had quite an addiction to drinking and smoking in my youth, you know, I can easily go the other way and have an addiction to, you know, kind of like straight, clean living, you know, can then become, you know, but then it's, you know, I think it's a temperament thing as well. You're obviously a more balanced and moderate character than I am. But what you mentioned those, you know, treats, what other things do you do as, you know, kind of like treats or, you know, kind of pleasures, right?
Well, I mean, my travel, you know, I'm traveling a lot and teaching now and, sure. I mean, you're working, you know, doing workshops and Mysore and stuff, but I love travel. I love trying different cuisines, I mean, different parts of the world, that kind of stuff. So I get so much pleasure out of, like connecting with people around the world. You know, I really love my like friends around the world that I've met that who've hosted me and stuff, you know, and, even though it's working and they're like little mini vacations and, I find so much pleasure in that. So I feel like there's times in my life where I'm traveling a lot and, you know, like a couple months in a row where I'm traveling a lot and, maybe not working as hard. And then I come home and it's like, hey, now it's down to the grind. I got to get all this wood split, you know, so prepared for winter
so and logs to,
all this stuff. Yeah.
Logs I mean, to cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
But can you keep any of this routine on the road or do you have to let it slide a bit?
So my sleep routine, you know, I didn't share everything with you about my sleep habits, but like, I can keep similar hours of sleep. It changes a little bit. You know, I can't choose the surface I sleep on or what kind of pillow I'm using, that kind of stuff. So, I have to be a little bit more flexible that way. But like, you know, another thing that I was talking about with the quality of sleep is like, I think that keeping your phone out of the bedroom is a really important thing.
Hmm.
So like I plug my phone in the room over from my bedroom. So that for two reasons, you know, one, I don't want the you know, that 5G, 4G, whatever that is, you know, like near me at night, you know, I don't want that radiation. I don't have the phone near me, but also like, it's so easy to like wake up in the middle of the night and not be able to sleep and just grab your phone. And then all of a sudden all that blue light, you know, is in your face and you're like wasting time, like scrolling, doing dumb stuff, you know? So if the phone's not in my room, I don't get tempted.
How do you wake up? Do you have a little manual alarm clock with a,
nope, the alarm is on my phone. And that's the other reason why I like get out of the room.
Because
when that's going off, I have to get out of bed and go turn it off. Yeah. It gets
me out
of bed.
But not if you're in someone's house, like if you're traveling, then this is not.
Yeah.
Usable, is it?
You know, no, not really. So I just put it on the other side of the room or whatever. Or I'll turn on airplane mode at night when I'm traveling. So it's not getting the signal all night long.
And going back to the sleep thing again, what is the benefit then? I mean, people have always said, why do you get up to me? Why do you get up so early? It's just unnatural and, you know, it's unsustainable in the long term. Your body needs that rest up till 4 or 5. It's processing. The organs are processing, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You obviously find it beneficial to get up very early. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been doing it for about 12 years now.
Right.
And yeah, I remember people saying it's not sustainable. You'll do it for 4 or 5 years and you'll get burnt out. But I haven't yet. I mean, I've had little phases where it's like, okay, like I'm going to sleep in a little bit and practice after I teach. I've done that for little periods of time. But honestly, that I don't think is sustainable. My mind gets too busy. And then like after I'm done teaching, it's like, oh, I have this and that I want to do and all this stuff. And then sitting down and carving out 2 hours for my practice feels a little harder. So really, I find it most sustainable getting up early. And as long as I'm going to bed early, I don't know. I just feel really healthy doing it. And maybe a little bit of it's ego too. Maybe I'm like, oh, that's weak to sleep in. I don't want to do that. You know, maybe I look down on people who sleep in. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't know. But I'm really into that schedule, and it just really works for me. So
what does your partner say about it though? Does she do the same schedule as you?
Same, yeah. And that's another.
It's gonna be hard, man. You know, if your partner doesn't want to do any of this stuff, then how do you adapt? And I think a lot of people will feel this. How do I adapt a more, you know, a more conscious lifestyle, let's say, into a normal, inverted commas, lifestyle where, you know, the two things are obviously conflictive.
Yeah. You know, I don't have advice on like how to do that really, because I haven't had to experience that. Like we've always been on the same schedule, you know, which I'm fortunate for. I think that is, as far as sleep quality goes, regardless if you're getting up early or not, I think rising, like, or, you know, going to bed and rising on a similar schedule as your partner, the person that's sharing a bed with you, is important because it doesn't interrupt your sleep. It doesn't affect things as much. And there's like human, you know, whatever, human connection, or, you know, I just think that's important. That's one of the elements that I find gives better quality sleep. But yeah, I don't have advice for people who are on totally opposite schedules from their partners. I think the only thing is to say is that it's going to be a struggle and you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some kind of talking and compromising and et cetera. Yeah. But yes, it is. And I've had lucky to have had the same thing with Teresa, who for some reason is more yoga in her lifestyle than even I am. just naturally takes to it. What about alcohol? You drink alcohol?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I enjoy a nice dark beer.
Some kind of craft beer there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, I like beer for the flavor. I don't drink it for the effect. So I'm not drinking like 5 or 6 to feel drunk or a buzz or anything like that. I really enjoy the flavor. So I will have one, maybe sometimes two, you know, if I'm out.
Must feel terrible about yourself after that. Right. Berate yourself with 10 minutes in the ice bath after that. Well, any other tips as we close? You know, you mentioned the blue lights of the phone, taking the phone out of the room. You've mentioned off-gassing a number of times. You don't have a mattress with chemicals in it. Mm-hmm. Other things you might look out for that you can share with people?
You know, I mean, I have a list of so many different things. But really, like I said from the beginning, it's like, you know, if you are practical with yourself, you know, don't beat yourself up. Don't become addicted to this like hard lifestyle. But if you're practical and you just simply say like, okay, the way I'm doing this thing, is there a way that I could maybe connect to, you know, nature a little better in this way? Or is there a way I can protect myself a little more, you know? And, you know, like with eating, it's like, I think it's good to not have your phone at the table while eating. You know, like it's another chance where you can carve out, you know, time where it's not screen time. You know, whatever, and you're connecting with the person you're with, but you're also protecting yourself from that radiation, that blue light, all that stuff, you know? So I just feel like if we just look at, you know, how to connect, how to protect, you know, and are reasonable with it, you know, just what we can do, you know?
Yeah.
And we can do a lot more than we think we can.
Yeah. 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 Whilst also being kind of reasonable, as you say, like to not to let it get in the way of a relationship or, you know, living in the world, right? Because it can easily go, you know, quite a way down a track where it makes you completely antisocial and a pain in the ass to be around, as it were, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's conversations to be had to do it in a kind of diplomatic way where you're still connecting with people, because that it can go to, I think, too much to the protecting side, where everything, you know, then loses that connection, you know. Mm-hmm. But so I think the two principles complement each other quite nicely and need to be balanced out, right? Connect and protect, coming mm-hmm. into line would be I think a reasonably practical guideline for a great lifestyle. Well, I've kind of asked you about your guilty pleasures, really. So we can't do that. I think you've kind of, unless you've got anything else that in the back pocket, I think you shared a lot. I haven't asked you about your sex life, but we could go there. how do you connect and protect at the same time? I thought it was quite good, actually. But anyway, we'll leave it there. And you can catch Mark in many locations this year. He's going to he's coming to Europe. Well, I'm not in Europe right now, but he is. He's coming to Italy, Poland, UK, York and Banbury, and a number of other places that I can't remember right now. But yeah, do catch him. He's a great bloke and a wonderful teacher as well. So thanks again, Mark, for coming on. You can find links to Mark's website below, and don't fail to leave a comment or say what you think. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. And I hope you're doing well. You said you're in Asia right now, so we'll have to talk about that sometime. I want to hear about that.
We will. Yeah, next time. Right. Along with those trees, along with the list of the trees, yeah, all the different for sure. species. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.